Let's spend a minute talking about the process and what that can look like, with the caveat that it can look different every time you do a program-related investment. But it usually begins with identifying a potential investment that's suitable. And one thing I like to call out here is that it's not just a matter of a mission-aligned company, it's a matter of timing, too. Depending on the specific PRI vehicle you use and what you're trying to accomplish charitably, it, you know, what stage is for a for-profit company? What stage are they in? Are they in the seed stage, or are they at the series, you know, B, C stage, where they're starting to bring in more commercial investors? And how does that impact that analysis of no significant purpose? So the suitable investment's not just mission alignment, it's also timing. Certainly you're going to perform diligence. There will be legal diligence from the lawyers, accounting diligence, and your foundation staff will hopefully also be doing that mission alignment diligence. Negotiating the terms of the investment, this can be short and sweet. It's usually long. And in my experience, the co-investors are where, when you're explaining the specific requirements of private foundations under these rules, the co-investors sometimes have a little harder time understanding it and might need that lawyer to join the conference call or the meeting and walk through why the tax code is requiring of the investee company what it is, because it is meaning some special rights for the private foundation that other investors aren't getting.
I've actually been hired by the for-profit sponsor of the fund that was seeking program-related investments from private foundations, and so I was on the side representing the for-profit in dealing with the first private foundation coming into the investment, represented very capably by others in the room, and they wanted to know that they were understanding what the private foundation really needed versus what their documents just might have been, you know, what their templates might have been. But they also were very interested in negotiating one set of PRI side letter that would not only satisfy this particular private foundation, but would be sufficient for any private foundation that wanted to come in. Because what they didn't want is 14 different side letters requiring 14 different measures and 14 different reporting requirements, right, for every single different private foundation. So that might be one way to streamline in a complicated PRI situation. This one was, they were doing a low-income housing project in D.C., and they wanted to get a number of different private foundations, but they were very careful about thinking about it at the outset to be able to get the one side level letter. Mm-hmm. And that might be one way. It's harder, I think, sometimes for private foundations to collaborate with others when they don't know who they're going to be, and the sophistication of counsel in different private foundations may be different. But that might be one way to suggest to a private to a PRI target that they could help themselves by trying to create a structure that is PRI friendly.
Mm-hmm. So once those negotiations are complete, you're going to be executing those documents, including that side letter. An opinion letter is an optional step here that we'll expand on in a minute. Then once the investment is open, you're going to be monitoring that. Depending on the size of your investment, you may warrant having foundation staff serve as board members or directors of the entity that you've invested in, and you'll certainly be tracking the charitable impact and measures, and of course reporting on it. So we have plan exit and exit the investment is the last bullet, but you're not going to wait until that stage to think about exit. You've got to think about exit before you even enter. So, but certainly, once you're in that investment, that becomes a larger conversation.
And we could talk about any one of these points in the process because they're all complicated. Exit in particular can be very, very complicated. It has to be thought about at the front end. We're only going to touch on a couple of issues in the remainder of our time.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So speaking now about those optional opinion letters, they can serve as a great documentation tool to show that you've met those purpose tests that we talked about just a minute ago. And if you choose not to do one, make sure you're still somehow documenting that in a way that's accessible for the accountants, the auditors, and perhaps the IRS examiner. But that legal opinion, it's all nice and clean and there. But you pay for that. They're not free. So, you know, depending on the foundation and how much PRIs are part of its activities, and the type of PRAs you're undertaking, there's a very different risk between a loan to a public charity and a multi-million dollar investment in a for-profit company. So depending on all of those factors, you may choose to use legal opinions or not. They may be internal or they may be provided by external counsel. But if they are external counsel, then that counsel will have to be part of all of those conversations about charitable purpose and measures. You certainly can't call them up and say, hey, we made an investment. Could you just give us an opinion?